Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome inside China Basin, your San Francisco Giants three times a week podcast brought to you by Canes Tire in San Rafael. Canes Tire has always had the lowest prices in Marin for 54 years. On today's podcast, we have two guests. We'll start with Sean Dunston, former Giants player and current Giants coach, talking about Brandon Crawford and Joe Panik as he joined us just after the All-Star break. And then today we talked to Jeff Pullman, a novelist who wrote a book that just came out called Mystery Ball 58, a season-long whodunit, which is centered around the Giants' first year in San Francisco at Seal Stadium. We'll start with Sean Dunston and a conversation we had at AT&T Park in San Francisco. Sean, Joe Panik, Brandon Crawford, they're so deserving of being All-Stars, and they've been so much fun to watch. What did you think about when you first laid eyes on them as middle infielders, and how much have they progressed, in your opinion?
I knew they was going to be good. It's easy to say that now, but with young players, you have to give them a chance and just let them play. Just let them just iron out everything and just play. When I first met Crawford and I seen him play, I knew he could play shortstop in the big leagues right away. He had that clock in his head. It just clicked automatic. And Joe, when I first met Joe and I seen him play, I knew he's going to be a very good hitter. So we had to work on the opposite. Joe with his fielding and Crawford with his hitting. And now they put it both together, and that's why they're All-Stars.
How tough is it to make the switch from being a shortstop to a second baseman? I know he worked on it really hard. He was in the Arizona Fall League and all that, but tell us about the progress he's made at the position.
Oh, he's outstanding. I mean, I remember they moved me from short to second. I could not do it, so I really commend Joe. And I said, Joe, you're really looking good. And when he came up the first year, you know, last year, Earl, I think July or August, and he struggled a little bit. Well, maybe because it was the big leagues, but you can see he put his work. He takes ground balls every day. Him and Crawford never miss a day of taking ground balls. And you can see the difference, and what a double play combination. I always tease him. I say, wow, you're really good. It's all stop a shot. I say, no, you're really good.
Second baseman, they have to get out of the way of those sliding runners. They have to have really good footwork. So how has he learned that? And you played with one of the best in Ryne Sandberg. I mean, he just really knew what he was doing over there. So how did Panik get to this point?
Well, you have to and give it to the minor league coaches. The minor league coaches taught him. They stuck with him and taught him. Because when I first saw him, he wasn't that smooth. And then the next time I saw him, a couple of years later, he's very smooth. He really made the adjustment very well. You have to give it to the minor league system, the minor league coaches who really helped him turn that double play. He really looks good turning it, and I still can't turn it. So I always tell him, oh, you lying. I go, no, I cannot turn it. Shortstop, yes. Second base, no. And I'm just so happy for the two players. They come from the system. It makes our system look good. They have a double play combination. Then they tease me. They say, Sean, you ever made an All-Star game with your second base? I said, yes.
When you were playing shortstop, I remember that you could make throws in the hole because you had such an incredible arm. And I look at Brandon Crawford. You know, he's able to plant and throw better than a lot of shortstops. It's amazing how quick he can plant his right foot. Is that a big key?
Oh, that's a very big key. But the key is that he knows how to play shortstop. He slows down. He knows how to play the hitters. I didn't really become a good shortstop until my third year. Crawford was a very good shortstop his first year. So you knew he was going to be a good one. He has it all. He just needs to hit, and now he's hitting, and he's becoming an All-Star.
What do you think's changed for him to hit the way he is, especially for power? He's got a career high as far as homers. He's driving in runs. He seems to really relax in those clutch situations.
Confidence, you know, confidence, and he's just playing, and it does help to play in the World Series, and he has two World Series championships, so the confidence comes, and when you win, it brings just confidence, and the team we have, everybody's just confidence. It's to start with Buster, and Buster give us all confidence, and then you got Pence. He's just an emotional leader, goes out there and plays. He's hurt, but he plays out there hurt. He's just saying everything positive, and now Crawford just put it together. I'm just so happy for both players. They put it together so early. That's the key, so early. It's not that easy. So I commend both of them.
And the expectations are so high for this team because they've been winning World Series. I mean, you played in the World Series when the Giants weren't maybe expected to win every year. So can you compare the way it was, you know, when you were on that 0-2 team to the way it is now?
No, these guys are really good. They're champions. You can't take it away. I don't care what era you're in. They're world champions and well-deserved, and they play like it. And we have a good organization, good pitching, good defense, and timely hitting, and just good players, good young men who knows how to play the game they know it's not about themselves, it's about the team, so that's why we are winners.
And how much are you enjoying your role with this team, being around these young guys? How much does it keep you going?
Oh, I love it. I always tease them. I wish I could do what they do. They said, Sean, stop. I said, trust me. I wish I could do it, but I had my day, and I'm so happy for you guys, and I'm just here for them, and I'm just enjoying myself watching these guys develop into superstars.
And you look like you could still play, though.
I could play with my mouth. That's it. That's it. Just my mouth could play. No more.
And what about working with Bruce Bochy and the rest of the staff, because it's so put together. Everybody seems to really be in unison as far as what you're doing. And I know you work with the replays, and you guys have to work together on that.
Yes, we all work together. But the main thing, they let me be myself. And when you come to a job where they let you be yourself, it's so easy to work for people who let you be yourself. And they know I love baseball. I just enjoy the game, and I'm just enjoying being with the team, and they have me on the staff and just let me help out. I'm very appreciative.
And the replays, has that gotten easier for you this year? Are you enjoying the challenge of it?
It's not that easy. It got harder, but I'm enjoying it. It's part of the game now, and I'm trying to do the best I can, and I'm very much enjoying myself, but no, it's not easy.
All right, Sean. Hey, thanks a lot for the time. Really appreciate it, and good luck to you guys in the second half.
Okay, thank you. Go Giants.
That's former Giants player and current Giants coach, Sean Dunstan. When we come back, we'll hear from Jeff Pullman, novelist who wrote the book Mystery Ball 58, right after this.
Hi, I'm Mark McElhone at Kane's Tire in Santa Fe. If you want the lowest prices in Marin and the best service, call us at 453-2942. Kane's Tire, 1531 4th Street, where our prices beat Costco's prices every time.
Our second guest of the podcast today is an author, a novelist, who has written a book that is set in 1958 when the Giants first moved to San Francisco. It's called Mystery Ball 58. Jeff Pullman is our guest. And Jeff, tell us a little bit about the book. What was the idea behind having a setting of Seals Stadium back in 1958?
Well, this is actually the third book of this kind I've done. Basically, quickly, what I do is there's a really fabulous baseball board game called Strat-O-Matic Baseball, and what I've been doing is playing that for a very long time. And I take old seasons and replay them, and then create stories and characters to kind of wrap around the action. And 1958 really appealed to me because it was the first year that the Giants and the Dodgers hit the West Coast. And there hasn't really been written a lot about the Giants' move to Seals Stadium. And I thought I was kind of filling a void there. Also, the idea of doing a mystery thriller in San Francisco in 1958 really appealed to me because Vertigo is one of my favorite movies, and that was released in 1958. And the hero of the book is a guy named Snappy Drake, who used to pitch in the Pacific Coast League, and now he's an usher in the grandstand. And on opening day, in the book, he finds a dead body in the intersection of the grandstand and kind of unwittingly becomes involved in trying to find who the killer is because he's being framed. And it just goes on from there. It embraces a lot of the culture of the time, involving like the Beat Generation and various things that were going on, including a kind of a scandalous building of Candlestick Park, the way that kind of came down. I did a lot of research into that and use that as a subplot. So it's just got a lot of great, a lot of color, a lot of San Francisco Bay Area culture, and really appealing, I feel, to Giants fans.
Okay, so Strat-O-Matic, you mentioned Strat-O-Matic, and how do you go about this unique way of writing books that involves Strat-O-Matic? Now, I was an APBA guy, but Strat-O-Matic really was known as a better game than APBA. You know, the board games are so much fun to play. You can spend hours doing it, but how do you incorporate that into writing the book?
Well, in this instance, actually the three or four or five of these that I've done, I do them as blogs first, and the blog takes about a year, and it's kind of like it's serialized, so it's like two or three chapters, so to speak, a week on this blog. And then what I do is condense everything into book form. I take out a lot of the game action so we don't have to read, you know, endless game reports
right.
And stats. But anyway, so I replay the season, and then as I go, I'm creating the story. And so a lot of times what happens on the field kind of dictates a little bit what happens in the plot. Now, Mystery Ball is a little different because it's a murder mystery. And as you know, with murder mysteries, you kind of need to know the ending. You need to know who the killer is before you start writing. So that was pretty much the case all the way through. And then I just filled in the middle parts with story as I went. As it turned out, well, I won't tell you who wins the pennant, but not all, and some of these projects, the person that actually won the pennant, the team that actually won the pennant doesn't always win in my replay. But anyway, what's fun is that next month in San Francisco, I've had a few signings for this book already, and I'm going to be doing one on September 23rd at Lefty O'Doul's restaurant and Cocktail Lounge, kind of a legendary place, which is also featured in the book, along with the Double Play Bar and Grill that was across from Seal Stadium. So it's 5 o'clock on the 23rd, and then I'll be reading in Sausalito at the Public Library on the 24th, just to get that out there.
We'll have more with novelist Jeff Pullman, who wrote the book Mystery Ball 58, right after this. Inside China Basin is sponsored by Angel Borelli, a nationally known expert on pitching mechanics from right here in the Bay Area. She works with some of the best pitchers in the Bay Area, troubleshooting and solving their performance issues. Listen to Angel Borelli's weekly podcast, The Fix, which discusses issues and solutions for pitchers from a sports science perspective, and get a weekly tip on pitching at Angel Borelli Pitching on Facebook. Check out our website, jimscience.com, where you can order her books and other publications. Contact Angel Borelli today. You mentioned controversy at Candlestick, and I've been reading the Willie Mays book by James Hirsch, and there's a chapter in there about the owner of the Giants, Horace Stoneham, and how he went out to Candlestick Point on a day where it was beautifully sunny and warm and, of course, very unusual, but that was pretty much it. He went there that one day and just said, oh, yeah, let's build a ballpark here. And, of course, it turned out to be freezing cold. But what kind of controversy did you find in your research about Candlestick Park?
Well, I was actually kind of Googling it because I wanted to kind of use it somehow, and came across a story of a guy named Henry North, who was a city councilman back then, and tried to launch a kind of a grand jury investigation on the funding, the financing of Candlestick Park. There was this kind of sweetheart deal going on between Horace Stoneham and the mayor, and this kind of financial entity that was created, where basically the land for Candlestick Park was bought very cheaply and then sold at a high price. It reminded me a little bit of the whole Chinatown water scandal that was going on in that story. Not as big, but it just gave me a chance to inject Henry North into the story and have a little bit on him. And with a murder mystery, you need red herrings, you need people who might have done the killing,
right,
and you're
not
sure. So I kind of tried to connect it for that purpose, and I think it worked pretty well. It's a nice subplot. It doesn't like dominate the story or anything.
We went back to a special year. I mean, 1958, when the Giants first came to San Francisco. What did you find as far as just the researches, what the atmosphere was like? Because here's this team coming from New York. People in New York are bummed to be losing them. But here comes Willie Mays, the star of the team. And finally there's some Major League Baseball in San Francisco.
Well, I think it was a very exciting time from what I gathered. Seal Stadium only sat about, I don't know, it was less than 30,000 fans, I know that. But they were packing them in pretty good. It was definitely exciting to have Willie Mays. It was also Orlando Cepeda's rookie year, and he turned out to be great.
Right.
And other than that, I mean, they didn't really, I think they did a little better in my replay than they did in real life. But They had some good hitting, not the greatest pitching, and they were in the race with Milwaukee for a while. But I think it was kind of an exciting time. Seal Stadium was, it was very small, it was very intimate, and there's a few characters in the story I have talking about it. They wish they might have double-decked Seals instead of building this, cockamamie new park. But the park was just, in the story, they're just breaking ground for it, so it hasn't really been known isn't known as like this horrible cold wind tunnel yet.
Right.
But it's funny because Brooklyn losing the Dodgers gotten a lot more play, and I felt there was kind of a need for something about the Giants, because it's just kind of an era. They were only in Seal Stadium for 2 years, 58, 59, and then they moved to Candlestick. But those 2 years, there just hasn't been a lot of stuff written about it. So, that's pretty much one. The other thing I found that was interesting is that the Giants and Dodgers played these marathon series. They started the season with a home-and-home thing that went for about five or six games. And then over Labor Day weekend, they played, I think, nine games in a row. One was a makeup, but it was like five in San Francisco and then four at the Memorial Coliseum in L.A.
Wow.
And I just can't imagine that today. I can't imagine the Giants and Dodgers playing nine straight games today without, you know, major fights in the stands or something. I'm really, really hoping that the Dodgers and Giants have a playoff series again at some point. You'd think they would. The games this September, I think, are going to be great between them. But and just imagine them in having an NLCS, like a 4 out of 7 today.
I know.
It would be wonderful. The Red Sox and Yankees had three of those.
Yeah, no, there's been a lot. There's been a lot of I think great rivalry going on for years between the Giants and Dodgers, and every year it's exciting. I can't imagine them playing that many games in a row against each other. That must have been something.
No. It wouldn't.
Yeah.
Happen, no.
This isn't your first novel. You've written other ones. So, what are the challenges that you've found? What have you learned about writing these novels as you go along and try to do ones that are more interesting along the way?
Well, the challenges are challenging. It's work, but it's a real fun work because I was been playing this game for so long, and most of it solo. I've been in a few leagues playing the game, but I found that I was doing it so much that I just kind of wanted to try to do something creative with it. I have a background in creative writing, and I live in Los Angeles. When I moved out there, I wrote a whole bunch of screenplays, wrote about 20 of those, and I sold three of them. But that business just kind of got soured on and turned more into fiction writing. But for me, it's very enjoyable. And the challenge is trying to come up with ideas, some kind of new concepts. For instance, there's one, the most recent one I did is called Dear Hank. It only ran about 6 months as a blog, so I guess you could call it a blogella. Basically, it's 1938, and the entire story is Hank Greenberg, the Tiger Slugger, series of pen pal letters with a 10-year-old Jewish baseball fan in Austria as the Nazis are starting to take over Europe. So it's kind of like it's baseball, and it's this story of what's happening with this kid, and Hank Greenberg wants to kind of help him, but he's kind of can't. Because he's playing for the Tigers and hit 58 home runs that year, and so that was kind of dramatic. It's kind of a different way of doing things. That one and another one I did that was also short. I'm probably going to turn it to the next book I do. The first one actually was in 1924. It was called 1924, and You Are There, and it was a 17-year-old Phillies fan narrating it, going to all the games at Baker Bowl. The Phillies were really terrible back then. And that's combined with a Detroit Tigers beat reporter who's covering the Tiger games that year. So the whole thing is written in the language of the time. It's kind of imagine like Mark Twain and Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn, if they were baseball fans. They get into these like adventures, and Vinny, who's the 17-year-old Phillies fan, becomes the Phillies bat boy for like two-thirds of the season. It's a lot of fun. And then the second one I did was 1977. It was called Play That Funky Baseball. That was the blog's name, and the book's name is called Ball Nuts. And that's different. That's kind of a goofy, almost like kind of a time travel thing involving 1977. And so they've been, each one has been different. And, I've gotten great the response to them, and a lot of the work is just trying to get as many people interested in checking them out as possible. All the books are available on Amazon. And that's pretty much where it's at.
Well, it's great that you are really a history buff, a baseball history buff, and you can go back in time. And I know that you're a Red Sox fan, and you know they went so long without winning the World Series. Then they go ahead and win in 04, 07, and a couple of years ago, and now they made a big change just yesterday where Ben Cherington is no longer the general manager. Dave Dombrowski is taking over. What were your thoughts about that?
Well, I think it's good. I've had it's funny. I'm a huge Red Sox fan by birth, but I've never, since they've won in three times starting in 2004, I've gotten a lot less anxious about them, about they finishing in last place. It's okay. Well, whatever, they'll come back.
Right.
I didn't have those feelings before 2004. It was kind of like, you know, Bucky Dent and, Boone, Aaron Boone. It's like, kill me now.
Buckner.
You know, I can't take this anymore.
Buckner. Yeah.
Can't take this anymore. But now it's different. I feel differently. I thought Cherington was doing an okay job, not great. I think Dombrowski's a real talented guy. As long as he figures out how to build a bullpen for the Red Sox, he wasn't really doing it for the Tigers.
Right.
I think it's a good move. I think they know what they're doing. I really think they know what they're doing, which is more I can say for a lot of teams. Yeah, I've been kind of hoping for a Red Sox-Giants World Series at some point because I really like both teams.
Yeah.
But we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, the fan bases, too, are just so great. Probably the two best fan bases in baseball right now, the Giants and the Red Sox. Well, it's –
Well,
yeah.
I have to add that I went to one game at AT&T Park a couple years ago, and I was astonished at how wonderful the fans are there. You kind of get a sense of it on TV, but live you get it more. They're just so engaged in the game and having so much fun at the same time. And it's just not something. I mean, the Cardinals have a really great reputation as good fans. I haven't been to a Cardinals game in St. Louis. I don't know what that's like, but the energy level, the kind of exuberant fun level in San Francisco is just something to behold. And I don't know if you were getting that at Candlestick.
No.
On those cold nights.
No, but it's certainly fun to think back to when the Giants first came to San Francisco. Jeff, thanks so much for your time. The book is Mystery Ball 58, a season-long whodunit, and Jeff Pullman is the author. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Okay, take care.
That's Jeff Pullman, author of the book Mystery Ball 58, and you can find out about his book signings on Twitter at JPBallNut. Want to thank Jeff and Sean Dunston, Giants coach, for joining us here on the podcast. Coming up on Friday, we'll talk to John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle as he will be in Pittsburgh with the Giants. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin.